Okay, thanks a lot to the organizers to inviting me here to a nice conference, and so far, at least up to this point, there have been very good talks. So let's see what this is about. This is about trying to derive diffusion in Hamiltonian systems, actually proving diffusion in a Hamiltonian system. So we have been discussing here in many talks that once you have a Hamiltonian system where you want to prove Fourier law, then typically what one at most is able to do is to derive first a weak coupling limit or Van Hoven limit, I suppose it's now supposed to be called, which is a stochastic system, and then you still have to struggle with a stochastic system to prove diffusion, if at all. So what I want to show you here is a model where you can actually of course do those two things, namely derive the weak coupling limit and then to prove diffusion. But what I will show you is that you can actually do the direct thing, namely you don't have to do the weak coupling limit. You stop before taking it and you produce directly, show directly that the Hamiltonian system actually gives rise to a stochastic system, and the stochastic system diffuses. So the problem is a very old one. So I'm not discussing diffusion of energy in these extended systems, but I'm discussing rather just the motion of a heavy particle immersed in an environment. So the original, I suppose, the original such model goes back to the discussion of Brownian motion. So you think about a heavy particle interacting with, say, gas, interacting with a gas of particles, and you have Newton's equation. So the heavy particle feels the force of interaction from the particles, and altogether the system is Hamiltonian. So particle plus environment is a Hamiltonian system, but you want to look not at the whole system, but you want to just ask what happens to the heavy particle typically. So you start it at the origin, so you ask, would like to ask whether the particle diffuses, namely if you take average over some initial state of the gas, compute the mean square displacement divided by t, show that it goes to a limit, non-zero hopefully, and then of course you can try to show more, would like to prove it maybe almost surely in the initial conditions of the gas particles, try to prove central limit theorem, invariance principle, etc. Now, so this particular example here, where this has been studied, of course, a lot, is where you take the gas as ideal gas, or particles of some mass. You have elastic collisions. The initial state of the gas is you just take a nice state, the Poisson density of particles and Maximilian velocities, and you stick the heavy particle to origin, and then let it evolve. Now, if you make an approximation where you assume that each gas particle only collides once with this heavy one, then with that truncation, the motion of the heavy particle is a Markov process. And of course, diffusion then follows easily. Now the devil is, of course, in the fact that this assumption is an approximation, and once you have recollisions, then the Markov property breaks down, and we have this problem of how to take care of the resulting memory effects. The way that has been discussed, of course, and this is now the analog of the Van Hove limit in the systems of energy diffusion, what we have been describing here. So the analog here is the weak coupling scaling limit, where you take a scaling limit where once you really take the limit, then the recollisions become infinitely unlikely, and you get a Markov process. So if you take a density of the gas particles, let's call it epsilon, and you observe observe at a time scale 1 over epsilon, then of course probability of a collision will be order unity, epsilon times 1 over epsilon, and probability of two collisions will be down by a factor of epsilon. So as you let epsilon go to 0, if you take the limit as epsilon going to 0, probability of recollisions will go to 0, and you get the Markov process. Let's say recolliding, it's at least a bound for that. Let's say like that. With such choice of parameters, then that's a classic, goes back to 30 years now, was done by Dürr-Gostan and Joel. Once you rescale now the time, just like I said here, 1 over epsilon, then the positions and velocities converge to a Markov process. Now, the question now is that if you want to do something for finite epsilon, that's what you would like to do, really, then very few results exist for this problem. Not only that, but it might, in some cases, the scaling limit which you get here, which is the diffusive thing, might not even be the correct thing. There are good reasons to expect, for instance, that in analogous system, in quantum mechanics, where you take a disorder quantum mechanics, the Anderson model in two dimensions, there's an analogous scaling limit, weak coupling limit, which was proven by Yao and Erders. So you get a diffusive limit, a linear Boltzmann equation. However, there are good reasons to believe that actually the whole system is localized, so there's no diffusion whatsoever, no transport whatsoever. Okay, so there are, for many reasons, it would be nice to be able to go around the weak coupling limit. Exactly. So if I fix epsilon, it describes, the thing looks like it's diffusing up to that time scale, but then if you wait much, much longer, then actually you don't move anywhere. Okay, still a few words about the history of this. In this particular model, this classical model, diffusion was proven when you take all masses equal in one dimension. The model is solvable, and that was done by Harrison Spitzer. Of course, rather different, not the Rayleigh gas, but fixed scatterers we have seen discussed here, the classic result by Bonimot and Sinai. Then in one dimension, there are upper and lower bounds, so diffusive upper and lower bounds by Sass and Todd and Sinai, and who was the? Yeah, that's why I can't remember the name, because I forgot even to write Sinai here, but anyway. So, but that's at least approximation, right? Okay, then there another result is by Nauf, where you have an attractive potential. It's analog to the billiard problem, but with potentials rather. And quite recently by did I forget to say that everything what I'm saying here is a joint work with Wojtech de Roque. So he and Frölich a couple of years ago studied a problem, quantum problem of similar kind. Technically, there were all kinds of assumptions involved, but once you made them, one of them was that you have to be rather high, well, more than four or more dimension, and then other assumptions, they were actually able to prove diffusion. So what I want to do here is to explain to you how to do this thing in a quantum version of the problem, what we have been describing, where the free gas is replaced by free quantum field. So you could think about physically a phonon field, for instance. Okay, so I try to avoid as much as possible the quantum formalism. So let me write two slides about what the quantum what the quantum model is, but then what we do is rather independent of what that formalism really is. But For those who are not so familiar with that, then take it just impressionistically. So so we have a particle, and we let it be. It's moving on the lattice, so it's hopping on the lattice. So the state space of the particle is just L2 of the lattice. We give the particle spin. It can be just two component spin. So I put it in general here. Spin is some finite dimensional degree of freedom. So it has an internal degree of freedom. So it's like some sort of atom with magnetic moment jumping around in the lattice. And then it's interacting with an environment which is the analog of the free gas. So here it's a free quantum field. For instance, a phonon field. So the Hamiltonian of the system consists of various parts. So there is the particle, just free motion of the particle. So that's square of the kinetic energy of the particle, momentum squared. So Laplacian, the nearest neighbor Laplacian on the lattice. And there's a coefficient which there's a mass of the particle, and that's what we do here is that we take the mass of the particle very heavy, so the mass of the particle will be really this thing divided by lambda squared. So there's a parameter m divided by lambda squared, and there's a parameter. Then the Hamiltonian has a spin part, so the spin degree of freedom has some energy attached to it. So this lot means the position, this means the internal degree of freedom, and this means the external environment. And the environment is just a bunch of free particles, free phonons. Let's call them phonons. These phonons. If you are, this will be. The things which we can actually deal with are the massive phonons, which are, I suppose, called optical phonons. So the dispersion relation near k equals 0 goes like k squared. The acoustic phonons are photons, which would go like absolute value of k. So in terms of the lattice oscillators, it would be the pinned oscillators. And then there's an interaction. So this is the weak coupling. So this is the coupling of the particle to the field. So the coupling of the particle to the field is such that wherever the particle is, so the particle, this is the position of the particle, wherever the particle is, it feels the field. So there is some function localized, this function which is localized in the neighborhood of origin. So the Hamiltonian here feels the field, which is this A and A dagger. This is creation and annihilation of a phonon at lattice site X, and the particle when it's at capital X feels the field there. I mean, it's moving there and it's feeling the field locally there. And there's the spin degree of freedom, so that you could think about if it was the electromagnetic field, it would be interacting with the spin, the magnetic moment of the particle. So there's an interaction like that. okay, and then the small parameter here is lambda. So the strength of the interaction here. Of course, if lambda is zero, nothing is happening. The particle doesn't know about the field. It just shoots ballistically and nothing happens. And what we would like to show is that in this system, the particle actually, once you turn on this interaction, diffuses. And the unphysical assumption which we are making here is that the particle is very heavy. The mass of the particle will be actually proportional to the small parameter squared here, inverse of that. No, in this case, certainly I expect diffusion for. I don't need to take that. I mean, certainly it should diffuse. Yes. It should diffuse, but you will see in a moment why we have to do that. So. it's essential here. Yes. In the classical problem, which I was describing at the beginning, there was no internal degree of freedom. There was just a particle. And that's of course something which should already diffuse. What we need is this internal degree of freedom. Okay, so then how does it start? What are the states? The states states of the system are given by its quantum mechanics, so they're given by wave functions, or more generally density matrices. So let me call the initial state zero refers to at time equals zero. So we take them independent, so that there is some density matrix for the particle and some density matrix for the field. For the particle, you just take it close to origin. So this is density matrix is an operator whose matrix elements it's in the particle space. So the positions of the particle and the eigenvalues of the spin part of the Hamiltonian. So this is a matrix, and you are interested in the particle initially being localized near origin. So this should be localized near origin. So basically, all the matrix elements of rho are the ones which are x and x prime are say just zero. For the environment, you take it in an equilibrium state. Okay. We can also do a non-equilibrium version of this, where the particle is interacting with two different temperature heat paths. But let me describe you this equilibrium case. So that's the initial condition, and now you let it evolve in time. So how does it evolve? Just like in classical mechanics, in quantum mechanics, it's just the Hamiltonian flow. The Hamiltonian flow is just given by conjugation by e to the ith, the density matrix evolves with this equation, and this is of course the unitary evolution, time evolution of the full system. And what you are interested of, as I said in the beginning, in the classical case, in the quantum case also, you just want to look at what the particle degree of freedom is doing. So that's called the reduced dynamics. So you look at let's define the state of the particle at time t to be just you take the whole system at that time and you trace over the environment at that time. So trace sub e means that you take average over the initial state of the environment, the Gibbs state of the Fanon field. Well, then the probability density for the particle position according to quantum mechanics then is just the diagonal part of this density matrix, where you take trace over the spin degree of freedom. So it's basically, if you forget about the spin, it's just this diagonal part of the density matrix. So that's a probability. That's an honest and good classical probability distribution, sums to one once you sum over x. And the diffusion you would like to show is that you would like to show that this probability measure becomes that of diffusion as t goes to infinity. Namely, if you look at, for instance, the generating function, expected value of the particle position divided by square root of t, let's look at, for instance, the Fourier transform of that, then that should converge to Gaussian. Okay, so what is the weak coupling limit? The weak coupling limit here is very classical. Classical meaning done long time ago already. The weak coupling limit is that just like in the classical model I was describing in the beginning, if you look at if you think about in terms of these recollisions, then the time scale is order one of lambda squared. You can easily see that when you start doing perturbation theory with this Hamiltonian, the interaction squared will be the first event where you have where you get interaction. So for times of order one over lambda squared, there will be one photon or photon or whatever this thing is, emission or absorption event. So that's the weak coupling time scale. Now since I have taken the mass so big, it means that during this time the particle still has only covered, gone around order unities. In the weak coupling limit, you don't scale the space at all. Here you only scale the time as coupling constant to minus two. Then the analog of the thing which for the Markovian limit for the classical system here is, as you take lambda to zero, then the reduced dynamics becomes Markovian. Okay, not so surprising for the same reasons as in the classical case. It becomes Markovian. Of course, we are still quantum, so it's a quantum Markovian process, but it's more or less describable in terms of classical Markov process. So in particular, if you look at the diagonal of the density matrix in momentum space, then that's just the Markov jump process in the weak coupling limit. So we have just phase space consists of the energies of the internal degree of freedom and then the particle momentum, and you are jumping from these states to energies jump, so there are quantum jumps of energies and quantum jumps of momenta. That's the process. So this is a classic result of Davis going back to 30-40 years now. Okay, so and since this is Markov process, then if you take this as your starting point, then you can of course show diffusion. So what we would like to do is let me still continue with the analogy to the Rayleigh gas. So the recollision and memory in the Rayleigh gas, if you now start to try to do the Rayleigh gas beyond the weak coupling limit, then you have this recollision problems where you get memory. So here the analog of that is that the environment, the free quantum field, you have this free field which has its own time evolution, so it's a bunch of infinite bunch of harmonic oscillators, and it has very slow decay of correlations. Actually, the correlation function of the field, let me call it zeta x and t. So this is the amplitude of you emit a phonon at time zero at origin, and you absorb it at time x at time t at x. So this is the analog of the two-point function, correlation function of the classical case. That decay is like 1 over t to the power d over 2. So this decay, this is the case when you were asking whether there's a mass or not. So this is the decay when you have the mass, when you have the pinned phonons, let's call it like that. If you take the other ones, photons, the decay is slightly weaker even than that. Now here's the result. So we are assumption is that the particle is well coupled to the field. So this is a property of the spin degree of freedom, the spin Hamiltonian in the coupling of the particle to the field. It's basically well coupled means that this weak coupling limit here, the Markov process is diffusive. It's generic, but you have to choose your coupling so that this is the case. So, oh, it could have a zero diffusion constant. Yeah, you want diffusion constant to be non-zero. Generically, it is, but okay. So you are seeing that, and then we can. Actually, it doesn't have to be free. It doesn't have to be the thermal state, what I wrote. All you need is really that it's a Gaussian state with a decay of correlations at most 1 over t to power 1 plus alpha, where alpha is at least 1 quarter. Actually, one can go all the way up to 1, not included, but if you look at this, this thing here, this goes like 3/2 in 3 dimensions. So that's what we can treat. Photons, it goes in 3 dimensions like 1 over t, and that's exactly on the borderline, which we cannot treat. So that restricts us to three dimension and the optical funnels. Okay, so if you make this assumption, so this is the environment what you take, then you have diffusion. So for small lambda but not zero, the motion is diffusive. The expected value of the particle position goes like x squared over t as time goes to infinity. And the diffusion constant is the Markovian constant plus a term. This is actually goes like some fractional power of lambda, but there's a small correction which goes to zero as lambda goes to zero. Okay, so how does this come about? The strategy here, what I will explain is now nothing to do with the quantum. It's the strategy for all these problems what we have been describing. So strategy is the following. So the weak coupling limit, if you take it literally, tells you that you get the Markov process. So, but of course, if you don't, it also tells you that at time scales of the order of 1 over lambda squared, the system looks like a random walk. In our case, it looks like a random walk which travels a distance out of unity, so we didn't have to rescale space here. So it looks like a random walk. But then there are corrections to this random walk, which are non-Markovian and long-range in time. This would be these are the memory effects of the in the case of the Rayleigh gas. And exactly the same thing here, because the particle interacts with the environment, it affects the environment, so you get non-Markovian long-range corrections. But it looks like what we are trying to do, proving this expected value result here, is that we are interested in an annealed central limit theorem for a random walk in a time-dependent random environment. So the weak coupling limit is sort of providing you a good reference point, which is a random walk. It's a Markov process. It's a random walk. And then you have some funny corrections to it, which are random because the environment, once you take average over the environment, they become random variables. So so we have a time-dependent random environment with long-range memory. So it looks like we are trying to do perturbation theory around a stochastic system rather around unperturbed Hamiltonian system. So we start with a Hamiltonian system, we go to a time scale where we suddenly see a stochastic process emerging, but we don't go all the way to the limit, so we have this stochastic process with a extra randomness attached to it. So it's an environment which is random. So that's how we're going to do this thing. So we are just going to view it as a random walk in a random environment. It's quantum, but it doesn't make any difference. So I can explain you what we are doing just in the case of classical walk, because up to a certain point, everything goes word by word the same way. So let's think about for a second random walk in random environment. From the point of view what we are interested here. So now think about that you are given some random transition kernels on the lattice. So these are transition kernels. They are positive, non-negative, and they sum to one. Okay, so these are like transition probability go from x to x prime in time, and they are indexed by time. They will be time dependent. There's also assumed that their law is invariant under space and time translations. And once you take average over the randomness, let's suppose that we have just a transition kernel of a simple random walk. Okay, so these are random kernels. Once you take average, they should be just a simple random walk, or some diffusive random walk. Let's put it like that. Okay, so then we can of course write this U as as the average plus fluctuation, and we could call the fluctuation depends on time. So this is the recollisions in our case, the non-Markovian recollisions. Let's call it dynamical disorder. So this is a random variable, random kernel, and it's characterized by correlation functions. So, and the way we are going to deal with this is going to just study the correlation functions of the random of this random correction. So a general correlation function is product of take matrix elements at various time points and various x's and x primes. So there's a bunch of indices here, x's and x primes and times. So times are, let me order the times in increasing order, and then there are some points on the lattice. So these are functions. Total. I will make the translation. I will give you the translation to them. But that's exactly what it is. Yes. And in the classical Rayleigh gas, it would be exactly the same. U would be the Liouvillean just the evolution of probability measures under Hamiltonian evolution, and T would be average of the Hamiltonian evolution over the initial state of the gas. Okay. Now, let's suppose that this correlation function. So this is they have some memory. Okay, they have memory in time, and maybe they're correlated in space also. Actually, the thing what we do, correlations in space play no role whatsoever. And so let's suppose that this disorder correlation functions have integrable decay in time. So we have random walking, random environment, where the environment is arbitrary correlated in space, but it has integrable decay in time. So integrable decay, I mean that let's get rid of the space. So I integrate over say the future and take sup over the past. So these are transition probabilities. So this is a reasonable thing to do. So I get rid of the space. And then just look at connected correlation functions. So truncated, the cumulants of these Bs. So you require that the cumulants have integrable decay. So every time in these time differences, every time you take two times far apart, the decay is slightly more than integrable. So let me put there minus one minus alpha as the time decay. Then with those conditions, then you can prove that if you take the annealed thing, then with the expectation, you look at now, what are you supposed to, what do you want to prove? You want now to evolve in time. So you multiply these transition kernels from time 1, time 2, etc., up to time n. You want to rescale space by square root of n, and take multiply the thing by n to d over 2, and show that in the end you get the Gaussian. That would be annealed central limit theorem for our random walking random environment. Okay, so this is rather this is what we prove, and the analog of this in the quantum case. If you add a little bit of spatial decay then to these correlation functions, then you get also a quenched central limit theorem with the same idea. Anyway, so let me describe for a second how this comes about in this model. So let's look at the transition kernels again. So there's the average and the fluctuation. And what we want to do is we want to study the product of these guys with these scalings. And the way we are doing it is that we don't immediately. So this means that you are trying to think about the time instances here, the weak coupling limit times. They are the 1 over lambda squared times. We are not able to do this directly because that would be solving the problem. We were able to go into these mesoscopic times, which the U's represent, and now we want to sort of go beyond that. So we do it slowly. We pick some parameter L big but finite, independent of everything. Block the times here. So solve the problem for this finite time L, and do this rescalings what we have here, and then do it again and again and again. So let's call this renormalization group transformation. You take this kernel here, you do this rescaling and multiplication, you get a new kernel, and what you are interested in is iteration of this operation. So the original problem, what is to study this, is just gotten by iterating this ad infinitum, transformation. And what you want to show is that once you write after n steps of this iteration your dynamical evolution, then it has an average and a fluctuation, and you want to show that the average becomes Gaussian and the fluctuation disappears. Okay. And what we show is that once you start with a model which has cumulants here, which satisfy such a smallness, so there's a small parameter here, and that decay, then we show that once you do this thing, it iterates in the sense that the renormalized noise becomes ever smaller. It has the same temporal decay, but instead of having delta to power m, it will have something with delta n to power m, where delta n goes to zero as n goes to infinity. Now, let me do you just a fast computation to show how this goes. Once it's set up correctly, all you need to really understand is the linearization of this transformation. So since the iterative step involves a finite time problem, just a finite fixed time, it's obvious that if you had inductively done what we did, then the new average will be just a rescaling of the old guy plus something which is ever smaller, so order delta n, and the new noise will be some linear transformation of the old noise plus something which is only all smaller, and the new noise, the linear part of the new noise, means just doing this transformation here, where you insert this decomposition and picking just at one of these times a b, and in the other times the t. Okay, so it's explicitly you have a bunch of t's and a b and a t. So you random walk in time m, then you hit one of these noises, and then you random walk again the rest of the time, and you do a little scaling. So what we need to do reduces to just showing that once you do this, since there will be this here, you only need to show that this linear transformation, once you plug it into the cumulants contract, and that will now be crucially dependent on what the time correlations are like. So to cut a long story short, let me tell you what the result is. If you just blindly do it, so I'm computing here a two-point function, but maybe I will not go into the details. When you blindly do it, you will see that things depend very much on the time correlation decay. Once you take two of such guys, you will basically have two sums of these times here, and you pick up a b and another b at different times, and you need some correlation between these two times to control the sum over times. Once you blindly do it, it seems that it doesn't work at all. You need this alpha to be at least whatever the alpha, even if you have very fast decay of time correlations, it doesn't seem to work. Actually, it works if you then remember that you are dealing with random walks. Random walks have this addition condition that probability is conserved. So in particular, this noise here is not anything, but it actually has a conservation law. It sums to zero. So there's a gradient. So this is like getting gradient. You need a gradient in the derivation of hydrodynamic limit. You need to extract a gradient. The same thing you have to extract here. this thing sums to zero, it's local, so there's a gradient which is acting. Once you take that into account, you gain one power of this time, what you are doing here, and everything works fine as long as the time decays, at least integrable. So the thing contracts with L to minus 2 alpha, where alpha is how much you are faster than linear. So upshot is that the noise is irrelevant if the temporal decay is faster than that. So that's a sort of classical random walking random environment and a brutal analysis of that. In our case, we want to do the quantum problem, and here is the translation. So the one time step of the classical problem, what I was describing you, means that you are looking at time interval, this weak coupling time intervals. They are long but finite, length L minus 2. The U is unitary dynamics during that time interval. The expected value of the noise is partial trace over the environment. The expected value of the unitary dynamics, that's the reduced evolution of the particle. This is close to the Markovian approximation. So that's the Davis theorem, is that this thing converges as lambda goes to zero to the Markov approximation, but you have to show that it's close to it, and that's not difficult in this case. And then there is the noise, which is the effect of recollisions, and you have to show now that this noise satisfies those correlation bounds what we had. So this noise is small and satisfies the correlation bounds. The correlation bounds should be always the case. The thing that it's small will be very difficult if I don't make this assumption that the mass is huge. So if I want to deal with, say, diffusion in Anderson model or just a particle whose mass is big but not dependent on lambda, then it becomes much more difficult. So then we just plug it into this machine, we control the cumulants, and that's how it goes. I think I have 1 minute, right? So I skip that, except that let me just say one curious thing here. So I said the conservation of probability saved the classical case. In quantum mechanics, it doesn't exactly do it. You can only use it sort of in the end of the time because you take traces, things don't commute. So it doesn't actually help, but what helps you is reversibility. We have underlying Hamiltonian system here, so there's time reversal, and the time reversal gives you another conservation law, which is analogous to the conservation of probability, and that makes the thing work. This is analogous, if you are familiar with random walks and random environments, if you have a symmetric disorder, then the Varadhan ideas, you can show that under very general conditions, the random walking random environment is diffusive. We are here sort of using that, but I don't think we are using it to really. So we are not able to go beyond three dimensions and things like that. I think if one could figure out how to use this reversibility a little bit more, then maybe one could do more non-perturbative results here also. Anyway, it's a realistic Hamiltonian model with diffusion, and it's actually quite nice to see in quantum mechanics very explicitly how diffusion, decoherence, thermalization come. Everything can be done quite cleanly. So the challenge is to go beyond the large, to go to smaller mass. And the challenge is also to consider not one particle as an environment, but to treat the other particles as an environment. So we made a little attempt with Jean to do this recently, but fair to say that this is still undone. Okay, thank you.
Derived to the particle coupled harmonic oscillator, and all the Lundberg process.
But that's a Gaussian part, that's a harmonic particle, I suppose. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's exactly soluble. Hmm? That's exactly soluble.
Yeah.
That's right, yeah. Oh, certainly, yes. The spin. You would need this this internal degree of freedom is producing is sort of effectively a noise. So it's, the weak coupling time is very long, it's 1 over lambda squared. The particle doesn't move very much, but the spin spins a lot, okay? And that produces the Markovian dynamics already at that time scale. So we use the spin very heavily. So if I didn't have that, if I kept the time scale of the mass or the unity, then the particle would have gone far away and I wouldn't have had this. Yes, you could torture yourself with that. So we did an analogous thing: is return to equilibrium when you have the particle doesn't move. So you take a quantum a particle in a well and couple to environment. So we did that thing. Of course, that's been studied by, for instance, Segal, Bach, and Frölich, and many other people. So we used these ideas to do that. But again, there. Quantum mechanics is nice because you can talk about finite level systems, so you don't have any problems. If you have classical and you want to do the classical return to equilibrium, that's not done actually, and it's all kinds of hard analysis problems with that. Classical? Not really. No. Well, we can discuss it further. Okay, we can discuss about that. I don't agree with that. But.
Okay. And,